Hello everybody and welcome to this week's penultimate Football Fans Podcast, penultimate of the season.
When I remember we played against Inter Milan and the centre-backs, Materazzi, and I can't remember who was the other one at the time, but they bullied Drogba. Literally every foul they can get in, and Anelka just stood to the side. It was like, no, I don't want none of that. You know what I mean?
A dive is you trying to gain an unfair advantage. You know, simulating and creating something. You're trying to see Pogba in that situation. Can we say he was trying to do that, or was he just trying to jump out of the way? Now the panel's going to have to say, was he trying to simulate, or was he actually trying to get out of the way?
You know, we've won it with the record amount of wins. I know people have tried to play that down, but I'd rather win with a record amount of wins than draw my way to be an invincible.
My name is Jordan, your host, and I'm joined by a couple of fans for this FFP this week. We are joined on the pod this lovely Tuesday evening by Ezekiel Taiwo, Man United fan.
Hi. So. We're good, as usual, you know.
All good?
All good. Right. Into the season, bit sad, but you know. We'll get on by.
You're going to have to. Yeah, you ain't got much choice, really.
Move on.
And we're also joined by Gabriel, Chelsea fan. I did say on the pod last week that I would congratulate whichever Chelsea fan we had on the pod this week. I mean, we'll discuss Chelsea, we will win a little bit. So yeah, Chelsea champions of the Premier League.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Well done.
Feeling good. Our 8,420 fans are all delighted that we could do something that other teams haven't done for like 25 years. So we're all good. We're all happy.
That's a slight shot at Jody there, featuring the pod last week. It was having a Chelsea. But yeah, well done and all that rubbish, whatever. Let's move on. Let's do a quick drive-by. I've only got one question I want to really ask you guys, because a lot of the other points are kind of entwined in the kind of topics I want to discuss later on in the show. So I've got one question I'll put to both of you. I'll start with you, G. Player A has won a World Cup, 8 Bundesliga titles, that's 8, 1 Champions League winner. Player B.
Is that Xabi Alonso?
Okay, can I finish my question? Player B has a Copa America title, 6 La Liga titles, and 3 Champions League winners' medals. One is Philipp Lahm and the second is Dani Alves. Whose CV would you rather have? Repeat it.
Now I'm going to go, I'll take the trophies out of it and just say, I'll take Philipp Lahm's CV. I mean, I like Dani Alves, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to go with Philipp Lahm.
Well, no, the question is...
Oh, you just want the CV?
Who CV would you rather have?
All right, I'm still going to go with Philipp Lahm.
Philipp Lahm, yeah.
I've got to say that. I've got to go with it. Okay.
All right, fair enough, fair play. Steve, same question. Who CV would you rather have? I'll repeat it. A World Cup winner, a Champions League winner once, 8 Bundesliga titles, or Dani Alves once, a Copa America, 6 La Liga titles, and 3 Champions League.
Yeah, Philipp Lahm's CV for me.
Why?
I think that World Cup kind of tops it. And yeah, it's consistent sort of league titles. Generally for me is the bread and butter of what we, you know, what footballers do, win your leagues. So if you've got more of your domestic cups, leagues, then I'd say that wins, plus the World Cup. Then.
So what would you say is the toughest and most competitive competition in the world?
European Cup, probably.
Alves won 3.
As in the European Championship.
Sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah,
even
yeah,
the European Championship is the most competitive competition in the world.
Yeah.
G? What's the most competitive? What's the hardest trophy to win?
You know what? Zeke has a point about the European Championships. I think they probably are underrated in terms of being of competitiveness. I think, you know what, you're going to say I'm sitting on the fence, but
well, I am.
But what I'd say is I don't think winning 3 Champions Leagues for Barcelona is necessarily harder than winning other trophies. 3 Champions Leagues in general, But three Champions League for that Barcelona team in that era, you know, I might have got three medals in that era. No disrespect to
but he wasn't a side man. He was a contributor.
He was a part of the strong supporting cast. He wasn't the main man.
Okay. Maybe a tad harsh, but okay, fair enough, fair enough. So you both go in Philipp Lahm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Before, I'm just thinking, should we do Chelsea first or should we do... Nah. No, let's
save the best to last.
No, let's do Chelsea first, get out of the way. Chelsea, obviously, we know, Premier League champions, fifth Premier League title. You're actually level now with Sunderland in terms of top flight titles. So well done. Real talk, you are. You're actually level now with Sunderland. So congratulations.
I haven't got one congratulations.
You're not getting any
I said congratulations. It was a begrudging one, but I did say congratulations at the start.
I won't.
Yeah, Zeke hasn't and he won't, so we'll have to deal with that. But what I want to know, guys, is Chelsea, how impressive, and I will start with you on this one, Zeke, because I'm going to come to you about something separate in a second. How impressive was this title win?
I was impressed, I won't lie to you. I don't think it was massively impressive per se, because I think towards the end of the season, it all kind of turned into a one horse race, whereas at one point it looked like there were several teams competing. What impressed me was Conte's decisiveness and just conviction to change the system when it wasn't working well for them early on. I found, you know, they were a bit shaky, but then he went to a new system and that system was sort of like the template for the season for everyone else, in awe how they executed it. So I like the fact that, you know, new manager, new team, looked at it, nah, it's not working, change it, and they stuck to it and it worked. But then again, you know, Conte, out of all of the managers, top flight managers that were hyped up at the start of the season, probably had the least amount of pressure, in my opinion, in the sense that, you know, he came in with no sort of baggage, no sort of, you know, massive expectations. So when things weren't going well early on, he had that sort of freedom to kind of change things, because it wasn't, oh, Conte doesn't know what he's doing, you know, they're falling to pieces. And that sort of space to change it, and that sort of leeway gave them more time to kind of just, you know, take a risk, and it paid off. So I'm impressed in that, in today's day and age, that you change your system completely and it worked and you stuck to it throughout the season and you executed it so well. So I think for that alone, yeah, I was impressed with Conte's tactical approach there.
Should the standard of the league be taken into consideration when crediting Chelsea, or is that not, is that unfair?
No, I don't think this season, I don't think that's fair this season. I think and I see what you're saying, but for me, Chelsea did not benefit from everyone else's sort of poor runs. I feel they won this league by executing their game plan every week and to a T. It was, doesn't matter if everyone is playing badly, Chelsea are doing their thing. So they had, you know, that consistency throughout. No team could touch them in terms of their consistency. They'd play, they'd know how they were going to play, and they got it done each and every week.
Well said, Zeke.
Shut up. I'm talking. Whereas every other team was kind of trying it, up, down. So, nah, I don't think that's relevant for this season. But then again, the fact that it was close but not close, that's why we suffered as fans, because everyone else kind of just couldn't keep up with that sort of level of consistency that Chelsea had. So I think, no, credit to them.
Credit where it's due. G, were you guys very impressive, or was the competition just a massive letdown?
I wouldn't say the competition, the competition was a letdown to an extent. I think Tottenham put up a really good fight. I think the quality of the league argument is seemingly based around the lack of real elite players in the Premier League compared to La Liga. Because I think everything else is just about, you know, we don't have the Messis and Ronaldos and the Griezmanns here. But I think overall, I think we have kind of 10 teams in the middle that would maybe compete with any 10 teams in the middle, in any other league. I think to point out a few things, you know, we've run it with the record amount of wins. I know people have tried to play that down, But I'd rather win with a record amount of wins than draw my way to be an invincible. So,
oh wow! Okay.
So shots,
is that sort of show, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
shoot while you're winning. Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough. So I'd rather that. We've got a record amount of wins, record amount of points, or joint record amount of points. Also, record amount of continuous wins. In the period October.
He's come ready in there.
I'm ready.
This is his moment.
I'm ready. So
you won. Why be so defensive? So, you won the league.
No, to be honest, there has been a lot of like a sly, you know, swat. Even this question is kind of loaded.
In fact, to be fair, when I saw that it was 30 wins, I was a bit like, rah. That's quite impressive. 30 out of 38 games.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that it was 30 wins. Like, yeah. So even I was a bit like, that is really impressive.
But your question is kind of following the rhetoric. Maybe, I always think you loaded.
Even you said, to be fair, this season, the quality of the league this year, it isn't great. You said that you saw at points during the season.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just wondering, is it Chelsea were outstanding or did they benefit from the so-called contenders being under par?
I think kind of following them from what Zeke said, I think we've executed. I think if you look at how the top teams have performed against us, I think even if they were at their best, I'm not sure, their best in inverted commas, yeah. I'm not sure that they would have done any better against us. They flopped against the lower teams and we've been consistent. I think, yes, we've been head and shoulders better than anyone else, but I think at the same time, with the level of consistency of performance, we would have been at least competing, if not winning, in most Premier League seasons. It's not our fault that the rest of the teams have just kind of fell away.
So at your best this season, have you been better than Liverpool at their best, City at their best? Because I'm not sure you have. Yeah. I just think you've been more consistent.
Yes, I think if I look at when we beat Everton 6-0 at home, and I look at those 13 games in a row, I think at that period, yes, our best was better than maybe you could argue Liverpool and Tottenham got close to it, but I still think our best was the best. Now, what happened after Christmas is we became slightly more methodical. We ground out results. Teams got a bit more accustomed to the way we played and found different antidotes, or tried to find different antidotes to it, but we still managed to find results through. And I guess when you finish the season less impressive, people sometimes forget what you've done in the early part of the season. I think if we finished the season with that 13-game run, then people would have been singing our praises about not only the way we executed it, but the style of football as well.
Okay. Let's talk Antonio Conte now. Summarise his first season for us. How has he done it? How has he been? How have you found him?
Yeah,
you weren't convinced. I remember.
No. We were the first pod. Like, yeah, I was kind of like,
you were underwhelmed. I think that was the word you used.
Yeah, I think it wasn't an exciting managerial signing for me. It seemed to me like the best out of what was available, rather than a marquee name. Someone asked me last week what rating out of 10 would I give the season as a club. So as a club, I'd give it a 7 because I think if you're not in Europe, it does kind of take away some of the competitiveness and you know, dealing with some of the problems. But Conte, you'd have to give a 10 because that's all he had in front of him. And he executed, apart from maybe the League Cup, he executed everything he had in front of him perfectly. I think, you know, week in, week out on the pod, we talk about managers not being able to either, in kind of Pep's style, adapt to the circumstances they have in front of them, or in Jose style, coach the players to get the best out of them, whether that's through mental coaching or through ability. And I think you can point to 5 or 6 players in the Chelsea team that have seemed to have come on and have really got the best out of themselves and performed to at least a 7 or 8 practically every week. In some cases, you know, I mean, put it like this: West Ham and Stoke didn't want to take Victor Moses. I mean, you look at what he's done this season. That kind of says a lot, right? So I think for Conte, he can't have done much better than what he's done, and that's why he's got the LMA award. and that's why he's going to go on and win the double against
against you guys.
Prediction. Conte's an interesting one to me because I think he's done a really good job as well. But the thing that, as a journalist, that I find most interesting about Conte is this kind of like, I hear journalists talking about Conte and they love Antonio Conte. He's so cordial. He's so polite. He doesn't lose his temper. And I'm like, I didn't watch Italian football a lot the last couple of years, last few years, but I watched a little bit of it. He was a madman in Italy. And yeah. I'm just thinking, is he kind of being this guy now because of his winning and he doesn't really need to fly off the handle? Or, you know, are we maybe just a short run or something going against him from seeing him, the real Antonio Conte? Because he sees like this kind of bubbly, lively, animated character. Yeah. But I'm not convinced that's the real Conte. And it's not a bad or a good thing. Yeah. I just don't think we've seen the real Conte. I think we've just seen the cordial, the kind of you know, the polite honeymoon period Antonio Conte.
We have, and there is a point to what you said about us continuing to win and obviously the results being good and not being the need. But he has showed need on spite when needed to. I mean, I remember his touchline kind of spat with Jose Mourinho. I think to a certain extent the media have kind of love-ins with people initially, and maybe we're in the Conte love-in where no one ever sees anything. You know, it's pretty similar to Klopp, really. Klopp, like, goes at people every week, but it doesn't really get highlighted or talked about. And, I suspect that when things go bad or when people want to, you know, kind of rock the boat at Chelsea within the media, there will be more stories about bus stops. I mean, you remember the story with Diego Costa? The rumour was that he told Costa, if you want to go to China, go to China.
You know what I mean?
I mean, that's not... But because he managed to turn the situation around, it's been painted in him in a good light. If Costa had not wanted to play or had refused to play or something like that, then he would have probably been killed in the media for it, you know, same way that people like Jose get. Yeah. So I think it's first season, it's a bit of a loving. But at the same time, he's got maybe, and you know, him and Klopp, I'd say, have got a bit more street smart with the way that they handle things when things go badly. Mm. Like when he's had his clashes on the touchline, after the game, he's just come out and said, oh yeah, that's just part of the game. Never complained about it, never talked it up, never stoked the fires. Whereas some managers do, and then the story lingers, and then they end up looking bad.
What have you made of Conte in his first season, Z? Because I've really liked the way he's handled his players. Mm. You know, he's not had any nonsense. He seems to have kept people like Fabregas happy. G mentions the whole Costa thing. He was gone in January, and he seemed to kind of, I don't know if it was a case of, look, Diego, stay 6 more months, win us this league, and then we'll let you go. But he handled it well. The media, like I say, love him. If you get the media on side, as we all know, you've got a good chance. He seems to have handled everything pretty well. Is next year the test now where after the first year loving, it's like, okay, now we're going to see if we can bring this guy down now. We're going to see if we can put the pressure on him, see if we can, you know, make him look bad.
Yeah, I think he's just been very calm this season on purpose. I think he's played it really well in the sense that, you know, I'm just going to come in and do my job. It was a very sort of... It was a very specific job he had to do at Chelsea, given their they don't have the right word for the description of what happened last season. But any news,
so it's a family pod, so keep it clear.
Absolute madness. No, so him coming into Chelsea, I'm sure he's thinking it was an absolute mess. So what the team and the club needs is someone just to come in and just clear things up. Let's just start again, in a way. And that kind of translated into the way they were playing. Someone like Victor Moses, for me, you're right, he was, you know, seemed to be ordinary to some teams. Conte's like, fine, I just need you to do certain things for me, right? Everyone here, do certain things for me. And that's that system that worked. So him coming into a situation which was madness, everyone caught up on their emotions, I'm sure that has then carried through to how he has carried himself. Don't make it about drama. Don't create any bad noise within this team. Let's just go about our business for now, right? And that's how they've played their season. So I think that's been on purpose. So he's probably holding himself back from the dramas, because when he's on the touchline, he is, you know, this animated character. But next season, when you are defending champions and there's a new level of expectation from you, how will he handle certain questions from the media? How will he handle certain expectations from the media? I think he's then going to revert to his time in Italy. He's now going to say, actually, I'll do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And that will create friction. But he's played it perfectly well this season. He did not need any drama. Chelsea didn't need any drama. I can imagine Abramovich said, just come in, please, and let's keep our heads down.
Well, I think I've said before, I think he was a G on the pod a couple of times this season, that I think that we're going to see the real Antonio Conte this summer, because this might sound mad, I'm not convinced that he will be at Chelsea next season if he doesn't get the transfer budget that he wants. Because he clearly was pissed off last summer that he didn't get the budget that he wanted. He didn't want David Luiz. He didn't want to have to play Victor Moses at left wing back. He wanted other players in mind. Now he's won the league, his argument is going to be, look, I did it with your players, with your little idiot budget. I've won you a possible double in my first year. And now I want the budget that I want to bring in my players. So I think we'll see how they get on there.
If I'm Abramovich, I would say, yeah, you did it with my players, so do it again with my players. Why did I just spend
more?
And
this is where the problem could come up, because he might be like, well, no, I've done it your way. Now give me something now. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's a side issue anyway. Has Conte made Chelsea likeable?
No.
No?
No, you can't get rid of what happened last season and...
Not even this last season, but I don't seem to look at Chelsea and hate them in the way I hate Chelsea.
It's not hate. It's.
I think I've made us likable.
No, if there is a beacon for hate in Chelsea, it's Gabriel. No,
you've done nothing but made them likable.
Exactly. I don't think they've been. For me, they're not. They're not. You haven't fallen in love with what they've done this season. You can appreciate it from a footballing sense.
Do you dislike them less now that he's in charge?
No, I can.
He's not annoying.
I respect what they've done.
So when Jose was there, you didn't respect what they did?
When, if you remember, when Jose was, and they were flying off the handle early the season.
No, I mean the first in. I'm trying to, do you look at them differently now with less respect under Conte than you did when they were winning also under previous managers?
Yeah, but Conte's not Chelsea. Chelsea's Chelsea. So Chelsea's issues or PR issues that they have, it exceeds Conte. So if Conte is there and he changes the culture, changes the style, changes whatever over a period of 5-10 years, yeah, then we can say Conte's done something for Chelsea. But Chelsea's won titles before. Then they'll fall down the season the next, so they're the same team in my opinion.
And just finally on Conte, we're praising Conte. He's done a very, very good job. I'll ask this question to both of you, but should he be getting the praise that he is getting, considering, according to the awards, he has the two best players in the league, top three keeper in the league, top three striker in the league, best captain in the league? Do you know what I mean? He's not working with Sunderland's players here.
Yeah.
Should they be finishing top two?
Has he
worked miracles there, or has he done what he probably should have done?
No, because
it's
I
not
don't
four
think,
teams I, working I, with there, yeah, is it? Plus no
I
Europe.
I hear what you're saying, but
much being harsh.
You're being harsh because he's done what he's been hired to do, and he's done it in a fashion whereby, he was very efficient. And just looking at leagues previous, teams with better players have struggled to do what he's done, so you can't judge a man's success by another man's failure as such.
I'm judging a man by what the tools that he's got, and most of that team won the league 2 years ago. He's not working with Sunderland here.
I think we've moved away from the era that you have three, four super players and they are guaranteeing you the league. This league is crazy, so that doesn't guarantee you anything, because you're not only competing with other teams and their players, you're also competing with your own players, their mentalities and having to manage them. I think he deserves what he's getting now, and there's no guarantee they're going to do it again next season. So
okay.
Knowing Chelsea,
is this the crappiest Premier League you've won?
Not many to choose.
That is loaded. That one. That one is loaded. But you see where I'm going with though.
So as it's loaded, that do I have the right to reject the answer?
No, you don't. Take it and respond.
Why is it taking so long?
Yeah. That means that you can count. He knows where I'm going with the question, you know? And he kind of agrees with me. He doesn't want to say it.
It's not the crappiest. It's not the strongest.
Ah, there you go. Well put. Let's move on.
That sounds like a fence to me.
Terry, last game on the weekend on Sunday. Coming off, was that a fiasco? As many people, you were there on Sunday, weren't you?
Yeah, I was there.
I'm going to ask you the same question as someone that isn't Chelsea affiliated. But did you find it a little bit weird, a bit of a fiasco, a little bit uncomfortable with what happened, or do you see it as he deserves to do pretty much what he likes on his last game? That pretty much means nothing for either team.
I'm kind of like I'm not that fussed either way.
You were
It was. I mean, personally, I think we have history on it because we did the same thing for Drogba, and he came off early in the game. I think it was probably the 11th minute, but I don't know whether extended a bit. But anyway, he
was it pre-planned on that occasion?
It was pre-planned, and what they did is they actually carried him off the pitch, which looks silly because, you know, 12 men couldn't carry him properly, and they decided we ain't pumped our weights, so let's try and let's just give him a guard of honour. I don't like, personally, I wouldn't do it. I would let him play. I'd let him try and score. I would much rather get to the end of the game and then the 90th minute come off and get the applause from the whole crowd rather than do it the way they did. I think some people say, oh, but it's interrupted the flow of the game. Sunderland are down, Chelsea have won the league. Like, the game was practically a friendly. I'm not so worried about the integrity of the game. I just don't think it was a great,
yeah,
you know, I don't think
it wasn't the best way to sign off.
G
used the word there, the word that I've heard quite a bit, why it's been criticised. The integrity of the game was weird, that a player can pre-arrange with another manager, his manager, and their players, they're going to do that. Is there something a little bit weird or uncomfortable there about that kind of being arranged before the game? I think if it happens spontaneously, people be like, cool. But are you uncomfortable that a player, albeit as G said, in a nothing game, there was nothing on the game, but it just didn't seem right to a lot of people that you can pre-arrange that?
I know what you mean, but my deepest, truest feelings, I don't care. Honestly, because I'm thinking, it's John Terry, don't care. It's Chelsea, don't care. Sunderland, don't care. David Moyes, don't care. None of those. I don't care. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. Let's move on. The final next week, G. Yep. You're the clear favourites.
Yeah.
Is that a game that if you lose, you'd be really angry? It's a game that you'd be angry to lose that game
because it. People always try to find, oh yeah, but we won the league and it's bigger. Yeah, but you won the league last week, or maybe we won the league in December. The FA Cup's there. I think I said this to you when we had Tottenham in the semis. Like, the FA Cup for me has provided the only bit of kind of excitement and uncertainty in the season, because I think it's been clear for a long time, apart from Tottenham's like last hurrah, that we're going to win the league. So yeah, I want to win it badly. No one wants to end the season with the last game that disappointment, walking out. Arsenal fans giving it. Doesn't matter that they haven't won the league in 20-odd years.
They're still giving it.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I want to win that cup. I'm desperate to win it.
Zeke, Arsenal were the huge underdogs. Poor form, but their form isn't great. They've got the main defender out. They've got Gabriel, who's been playing right the last few games, out injured. Mertesacker has come in. Sanchez limped off in the Everton game as well. There's just a real dark cloud around the club at the moment. Is it all gearing towards an Arsenal win? You know what I mean? Chelsea are on fire. They're just got to turn up and win.
Right, you know,
it's
what,
the FA Cup, the magic and all that nonsense.
Yeah, honestly, I can't call it, you know. I don't know. I really don't know, because Chelsea, Arsenal, each of these teams on their days can be like stupidly amazing or just ridiculously bad. It feels like Arsenal are probably going to have their bad day over than Chelsea's bad day. But I'm just looking forward to a really good game, and my biggest fear is going to be a boring 1-0 from Chelsea or something like that. But if I had to pick, I would say nah, I don't see Arsenal.
Smart money's on Chelsea, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can see it being a similar game to when Arsenal played Tottenham about a month ago. I don't think Chelsea are going to batter Arsenal. I think they're going to comfortably beat Arsenal 2-0 in like second gear. Mm, one of those games where they won it 2-0, but if we really wanted to, we could have beaten you 4-5.
Yeah, yeah.
But we were comfortable with 2-0, nice day out. I don't think it'll be a battering, if you says that, touch wood. But I just think it'll be a comfortable.
I agree with that, yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see. FA Cup and all that. All right, that's Chelsea. Let's move on from that rubbish now.
Moving on.
Let's now get on to something. I haven't actually told you guys about this one. I'll do a quick... I was thinking about this just literally last night and today. I want to discuss this, and this kind of works well with what we've just spoken about in regards to the end of the season. I'm thinking that there needs to be a potential playoff-type system at the end of the Premier League. What's wrong with you?
I've been saying this.
I got in the Premier League. Last Sunday, when the last games were on, I was watching. My energy was invested in obviously the Liverpool game and the Arsenal game. Mm. Plus, I was working, so my kind of time and efforts were focused on those three things. So the kind of whole what happened at Old Trafford went under the radar for me until Match of the Day. I caught up on it yesterday, I think. And the other games just went by the wayside. And I'm thinking, I'm not sure I'm definitely sold on this, but I'm thinking the last game of the season, Watford can lose 5-0 at home. Palace looked like they were played really well against Hull last week, and then this week Palace lay down for a Man United under-21 team.
Oh, disgrace.
Borough put up a bit of an effort, to be fair, for the first half, and then they capitulated. I just noticed a lot of teams looked like they were on their beaches really, really early. I don't know if you guys all saw the last day of the season in French second division, where there were six teams split by, I think it was 2 points on the last day of the season. I think Serie A was only decided last week. La Liga was decided this week. The Dutch league, I think, was decided last week as well. And there's excitement in all three of the leagues below the Premier League in England, because they've all got playoffs. And I look at the Premier League and think, when was the last time we had a really... Well, how many can you think of, Zeke, in the last 8-9 years where there's been a title race at the end of the season? Both the City wins, the Aguero year and the Gerrard slip year. Apart from that, the title seems to be wrapped up 2-3 weeks before the end of the season. How do we make the Premier League competitive and entertaining right to the end? And I've heard the suggestion of a playoff, maybe not for the winner, but second to, six have a playoff and something to jazz it up. Because it just seemed like half the teams in the league in the last 10 days, 2 weeks, have been on the beach. And is that acceptable?
Not at all. And I'll just have to add a disclaimer. My excitement was about something completely different. I didn't know you were going here, but
did you think about relegation or something?
No. I was thinking like an all-star game in the off-season rather than a charity show.
Oh, jeez.
Anyways, it's rubbish. It was rubbish. It was just rubbish.
Rubbish final day, wasn't it?
It was rubbish. I don't think there's anything you can do. They will do. I don't like the idea of a playoff situation. Because top four competing to win the league?
I don't know. I'm just kind of
the fourth Champions League spot or something.
Yeah, just so that you keep every team honest, and even I don't know, some kind of system where
I think we just got to stick true to the league. It will come better. This season was
why
just, it was just. I mean, Tottenham. Honestly, if they hadn't lost to West Ham,
yeah, that's true.
You would, it's fine lines. It would have been a great close. And if I just find, shout out to Tom, that if they had if they had more belief from even when they were like 10 points behind, and just it would have been a good dogfight. You know what I mean? And City, Liverpool, Chelsea were just doing their thing, no one else did theirs. I don't think there needs to be any sort of major changes. It was just a rubbish end. But I think next season, you know, Man United is going to win it.
Well, I don't know where you're going with that. But even if Man United do win it, I'm just like, gee, just thinking, how do we make it so that the team that does win it, A, doesn't win it at a canter, and the 8 or 9 teams that are behind them, well, maybe out of the top four, because they're still competing for top four places, but your Stokes, your West Broms, your Watford, your Burnley,
sorry to cut you off,
all competitive.
What they need to do then is remove the fourth Champions League spot. if it's six people, six teams competing for four spots, if it turns down to three, that means 50%, you have to go all the way in. Mm. Or even just say it top two, and then, you know, third and fourth have to fight it out.
But the issue in terms of the last day of the season, in terms of entertainment, wasn't so much with Arsenal, Liverpool and City. It were clutching for excitement, but they did their bit. I'm thinking the teams that are like 7th to 15th.
Oh no,
those teams were just like, how do we keep those teams competitive? Can you think of anything that makes it, that can make it competitive? Because they clearly didn't give a damn.
I remember there was a point a couple of years back where it was first kind of announced that the difference in the places would be a couple of million quid. Yeah. And teams were like, oh man, like, you know, we got to go for it the last couple of games to try and get that million quid in. Now, the TV money just dwarfs it. So maybe what they could do, and I don't, is take a certain percentage of that TV money, put it towards the league positions, and then make it a competitive thing. I wouldn't want all of it, because it would just mean that my team, Chelsea, would get all of the money every year and it wouldn't be fair on the rest of you guys.
this guy's got jokes.
but yeah, maybe something that, because it's tough, because I less and less now I find in football that football is motivated by competition. It's more motivated by the money. And I think once the league positions are set out or there isn't too much money to be gained, teams kind of, okay, oh, well, you know, forget about it. So, yeah, maybe that. I think a playoff might be, but for what? Maybe the Europa League spot.
Yeah. I'm just reaching for something. I don't know what it would be, but I'm looking at all the other leagues in our country the last week or two, and they're always exciting. The Championship playoff wasn't overly this year, but normally the Championship playoff is really exciting. The quality is not great, but it's exciting. Yeah. Every team is still competing to the last game of the season. I just thought Watford 5-0. That was their strongest team, I think, as well. 5-0.
But then, does the Premier League need to be excited up until the last week? Like, you know, the fact that we do have the playoffs in the lower leagues, maybe it's an opportunity for them to get some attention that they would not have got.
Get that. I'm talking about the Premier League. It's kind of gone off my rant last week about what we pay Sky for a Premier product. I expect every game, or the majority of games at least, to be competitive. Some of those games on the weekend were not competitive.
What? I saw the trophy lift, so I was
happy. Alright, whatever.
I can't.
Just don't care. Just whatever. Another one of my kind of semi rants.
Is this like Jordan's bugbear?
Jordan Rant Day. Rants and Bants. Shout out to Rants and Bants.
But I think actually I'm hoping you guys may be with me on this one. Should clubs refuse to let players that they don't want to go sell? Should clubs refuse to let players go that they don't want to sell? I'll start with VG on this one. There's a lot of talk now, as it has been for the last X amount of years. This star player is being looked at by this club. I've got here Dyer, he's a dead cert at Co United. Sanchez, he's got to leave Arsenal. Lukaku, he's definitely leaving Everton. Pickford at Sunderland. De Gea, he's going. Real Madrid won him. Coutinho, although he's come out and said today he wants to stay in Liverpool, he's definitely going to Madrid. Hazard, he's definitely going to Madrid. And what I'm thinking is that why is it that these clubs have to sell these players just because Madrid come sniffing, United come sniffing, X team come sniffing? Should more clubs be like, I don't want to sell you, so you're not going anywhere? Or is it just the financial world that we live in, that if a bid comes in, you have to sell to Real Madrid?
I think we have these challenges in any type of business. And it's particularly difficult in football, because could you imagine someone coming to you and telling you, you can't move a job, you can't get paid more, you can't relocate? Yeah.
If I have a contract with you and I've got 3 more years on it, just because another company wants to employ me, it's up to my current employer to decide whether I can go on.
Most of those contracts we'd be able to break within a 30 days notice or something like that. Maybe it should be that at regular points, like, I mean, people can put in their contracts, sell-on fees, etc. You know, certain clubs that people need to accept. Maybe players need to look more into that when negotiating their contracts. But I don't know. I'd find it a big risk to kind of sit here and say, and you know, if a club wants to keep a player under no circumstances should they let him go, because then you get things like the Berahino situation where people just ruin people's careers and actually keep them. Don't get me wrong. I think it's one of the, I think players need to come better as well, and they need to respect the clubs that they're at. But I think it goes both ways. Like, players screw clubs over and clubs screw players over. I don't look at any either of them as particularly bad. I look at it as everyone's trying to do what's best for them.
All of these players, I think, bar Sanchez, have at least 2 years on their contracts left. So yeah, the clubs are in positions whereby, no, I don't want to sell you. I don't care how much. I don't care. I just don't like the fact that we seem to be in this era now where we just accept that if Madrid come in, oh, he's got to go. If Man United sell De Gea to Real Madrid, I will really laugh at them, because I'm like, you got the best keeper in the world. If I meet Man United, I'm sorry, I don't care if you want to go to Madrid. You're employed here, you have a contract, you're going to stay and work.
Yeah, but do you want a demotivated employee player or anything? Yeah. You don't.
You don't, but then clubs like Man United, Arsenal, Tottenham, Chelsea have the finances to say, we'll go and soak in the reserves then. We'll go and buy another keeper.
Yeah, but I don't think anyone wants that at their club, George. Mm. Again, it's taken kind of like kind of financials and kind of pride over what football's supposed to be about, which is kind of like,
is it dreams or just business? If you're Man United, if you're
okay,
Chelsea,
business. But then
it's business. You're
but
contracted.
Then over like a football's player's career is what, 10, 15 years. You have dreams, you have aspirations.
That's sentiment.
It might have been, yeah, but there's got to be some room for sentiment in the game, George.
It's business. You're an employee of this club. I rate you. I don't want to. If I want to sell, that's different. Yeah. But if I don't want to sell David De Gea, if I don't want to sell Eden Hazard, why is there an expectation, I bring you in, Zeke, that just because Madrid come in and Madrid come up rocking up with their big checkbook, oh yeah, he's got to go to Madrid now. I just don't understand why we fall into this.
I don't think it's a definite requirement. I think there is always a point in which you have to consider it. I think there's always going to be an offer. There's always going to be a setting where a player is warm to the idea and there is a commercial offer on the table, which is quite lucrative. So that it'll be bad business sense not to consider it. Every player is dispensable.
Yeah, of course.
You're right. So it's about how high you place that sort of point of which, let me think about that. You know what I mean? So in the case whereby a club doesn't want to sell, I still feel they won't sell. There's only a handful of clubs big enough to say, no, we won't sell. Whether the player wants to go or not, the club is big enough whereby you are competing here. You know, we don't necessarily know what happens behind closed doors. You know, the Costa situation, they probably told him, you ain't going nowhere. And look at him, he's won a league. The AR final day of the season, he's probably heartbroken over that. But he's still turned up and done his job. So these guys are professionals. You can't stop them from wanting to move on.
No,
and as
I
a club,
that,
as a club, you know, there's a point in which the bail money was like, okay,
that's my next point. I'm going to say, if it gets to the point where the figure suits you, so let's take Tottenham, for example. Yeah. Eric Dier has been heavily linked with, and I know some people in the industry, some other journalists, that they're saying that Jose really wants Dier. Mm. He's high up on the list of players he wants in the summer. Yeah. I'm hearing £40 million is is the fee that is they expect to come in.
Yeah.
If I'm Daniel Levy, I'm saying no. But if you want Eric Dier, give me 70. Yeah, we know that he's not worth 70. Give me 70 then.
And that's why the player fees are what they are. I mean, if we go into Daniel Levy's office and offer him 40 million for Dier, I'm thinking we are wasting our time. If we increase that money beyond 40, we are wasting our money.
But this is the thing. I think 40 might get him.
We have to forget about actually monetizing these people as commodities, because individually as players, no one is worth £40 million. No. So the money, the inflation is based on the buyer's market. shut up. The buyer's market or the seller's market, and how much the seller feels they can get for this commodity. So Daniel Levy is the most shrewdest negotiator in football, personally, I feel. So he doesn't have to sell. So he can talk about silly money. And if we pay silly money for Dier, I'm thinking we have completely lost it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because, I'm with you.
But in the end, I don't think there's a case whereby clubs that don't want to sell feel they have to sell because the player's upset, etc., etc. And I'll just add also, it plays both sides, but because when you think about it, what about when a player doesn't want to leave, but then the club sells him? And he has to go, you know. So for every player that wants to leave and the club doesn't want to sell him, there are players that don't want to leave but get sold. You know, so the club, they're not victims. They do it all the time. These players who are probably feeling, oh, I'm going to make it here. Next thing, they're, you know, shipping on to another part of the world or whatnot. So it's a business in a sense.
But this is why I don't completely subscribe anymore to the idea of player power. I think the clubs, in both instances, unless you're a Sanchez where you've got 1 year left, I think the clubs generally hold the power in these situations. If you're contracted, whether you want to go or I want you to go, ultimately it should be my decision. As, you know what I mean? As Daniel Levy, no, that's, as
Edward Woods. But it's dangerous. It's dangerous because clubs will screw over a player as soon as it suits them. So yeah, a player could say, all right, you know what? Yeah, man, I'm on contract. I got to play here. It's all good. I'm in it. Next season, they could say, actually, you know what? We want 60 million. You're out. But I stayed for you, you know. So I think that whole player power thing and club power thing, I think it's a moot point in when it comes to contract, you know, the negotiations, because each contract is different. I think each contract is set up so that in case, or in the case of, or if this happens, then there's an agreeable outcome. You know, release clauses. Why do you have a release clause? Because obviously we place a value on your head. If that comes in, but you're out of here. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So,
but if you notice, the release clauses for most of the players on the continent are always much over their actual value. So the Spanish teams, they do it right, because know I rate you. I don't want to lose you in the next couple of years. The only way I'm going to lose you is if someone matches the valuation double what I value.
You know, I would have put, you know, they would have put release clauses 5 years ago, thinking, don't be silly, £70 million or euros.
Sometimes it catches up.
And now the market's like, okay. Because Griezmann, they would have put that in thinking, that's not
no one's going to touch that. Yeah.
But now United's like, okay, we can touch that's real money. So, you know, it's just the nature of the beast, really. City, but it's the nature of it.
It'd be interesting to see, I think, this summer, if players like De Gea, Hazard, you know, even Pickford, it's less to a degree with Everton and Sunderland, because if Everton get offered £65 million for Lukaku, I get it at that level. I still don't think they should just bend over and take it. If you want to keep your guy and he's contracted, stand firm. But I get it at that level.
Yeah,
but
maybe if you play for Man United, Real Madrid is the equivalent of, you know, go from Sunderland to Southampton.
I just, if De Gea is going
to
go.
How many of our players have gone to China?
I don't know.
Zero. So you don't talk about step. People are willing to step down to leave yours. It's a club.
I just hope, you know, once I want to see that the De Gea's and the Hazard's still stay in our Premier League. But if they are going to leave, I just want to make. I'd like to know that it's on Chelsea's terms. It's on United's terms, rather than they're just being brainwashed into this. If Madrid, you know, we say all the time, oh, if Madrid come knocking, it's hard to say no. And I just think, why?
But George, they're human beings as well, George. You know, it's not.
It's business. You're an asset to my club. I don't want to sell you. I'm rich. I don't need to sell you.
Well, George, like, I hope you never own a business, because
that's funny why I don't.
If you treat people like that,
if you're Roman Abramovich of Chelsea, you can afford to take a hit on Hazard. You can afford it.
But then if you do that to Hazard, then it'll
go to the rest of the team. I think it sends a message to the likes of Madrid and Barcelona. You can't every summer just come to our league and take our best player.
It does affect the rest of your players, because they know, oh, my contract's coming to an end. What, I have to stay here? This is it. I don't love this club. I'm an asset. They don't care about me. So that's it's a very sensitive subject. And I think the big teams have more of a means to play the game and to call the bluff and to play that poker game, because they're like, well, we're big. Whereas the smaller teams is who you feel sorry for, because as soon as the player blows,
they're gone. Yeah,
don't even bother trying to compete.
And they can never realistically replace them as well.
Exactly.
Just don't see how we're going to ever compete in the Champions League again. If we keep giving Hazard to Madrid and
I think we will compete in the Champions League. Just
how if the general consensus is there aren't any world class players in this league,
I don't think you need world
the few
class
top
players
we do have are given to the ones with the world class players.
I don't think you need world an abundance of world class players in every
helps. You've got
top
a couple.
It does. You need elite players, and you need English teams or managers to actually do better. I just think we've just underperformed. I don't think it's a heavily skewed talent situation. It's just we've just underperformed. There's been many teams without World Cup players showing, putting the English teams to shame. So I think Man United are in it next season, subject to a win tomorrow, and then we'll show you how to do it. So good day.
Yeah, it's a big subject too.
And just to remind listeners, we'll be doing a final pod next week, and if United lose that game, it will be scrapped for a Man United special. With three Man United guests and Gabriel.
I can't wait.
Journalistic integrity. Clearly.
Just a heads up. Right, let's move on, guys. Gabriel, start with you on Seek. How much importance should fans place on the body language of managers or players? How important is it?
That's a tricky question. I think it depends. I think it depends on the situation. And it depends on knowing who the manager is and who the player is. I don't think it's something that you should hawk on too much. I think it's something that we probably do look at too much. You know, I think after the game where Man United beat Chelsea, 2-0, everyone was
really going, you played in that game with Chelsea at the moment after they smashed you. Was it 4-0?
Well, which one was more recent?
Let him have his moment. They're not going to win anything. So let him
So I'm supposed to override a more recent example for a previous one. Yeah, progress.
It was a meet.
Jordan, it's been a hard season.
In that game, I think someone was worried about Conte's body language, because out of all the other games that he wasn't animated. He stood there very docile, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah. But he won the league. Everyone's like, I'm worried about him. He might fall to pieces. Now he's thinking that. Body language, I mean, what is it? Someone could be having a bad day. Except I think we had last time I was on the pod, we were talking about Rashford's body language. Now, he seems frustrated because he's not getting enough minutes. He's playing behind Ibrahimovic, but the guy's flying now. And I've said, don't worry, he's fine. So I think not too much focus needs to be placed on body language unless you feel someone's not putting it in. Whereas I can appreciate someone's frustration on Martial, for example, because we feel like he's underperforming, he's not really putting it about, he could be doing better. And then when that body language is added to that, it's like, same way we were frustrated with Berbatov. You know, we wanted him to be more, but that's just his style. So we looked at his body language. But end of the day, I don't look too much into it unless I find a reason to, and I'm questioning someone or something, and I want to see you do more.
So, G, I've got just a few names of people I've kind of think are good examples of this. I've got Ozil, Berbatov, Martial, Sturridge, Herrera.
Sturridge.
I'll explain in a second. Herrera, Joe Hart. Just a few players I was thinking about of how their body language is. So with Sturridge. A lot of people say with Sturridge, he can be quite lazy and he can be quite, he only springs into life when he's in the box and that sort of thing. And his facial expressions a lot of the time kind of signify to a lot of people that he's this kind of all about me guy. I wanted the ball right on my feet. What kind of pass was that? He's very about himself to get the best out of himself. And people think that kind of translates into he's not a team player. Do you know what I mean? I've also got Herrera, who's an interesting one, I think, as well, and someone that, he's really kind of like, I don't know if it's a case of he's grown up and he's grown into that Man United status of I'm at a big club, I've got to conduct myself in this, but he's running around the place, he's, in the referee's ear, he's he's animated, he's getting into arguments with other players.
He's annoying.
He's very, very annoying, but hey. But does it matter? Do you know what I mean? Because his body language kind of says that I'm about this. Forget how good he is or bad he is to one side, but his general body language says to me that this is the guy that the fans look at. The fans, I think Marvin was saying a few weeks ago on the pod, he's, I think Marvin said he's the player of the year for him, for Man United, because I know it's the improvement, but I think a big part of that is because of the way he conducts himself.
Yeah. He won the award as well.
So did he win it as well? Yeah. There you go, yeah. So, and Joe Hart as well, he was criticised a lot for pre-match, that kind of pumping chest, shouting. How much do you read into how a player on the pitch conducts themselves?
I think the first things first, if you're performing well,
no one cares.
No one cares. But I can't lie. I do care, I'm an emotional guy. I want to see some emotion on the pitch, I mean, when last season, I can't lie, I went every week and I despised, apart from probably Zuma when he got injured, I despised 10 players until Hazard scored against Tottenham. I went and celebrated in front of them. And William went and they won me back. It's as simple as that. As
fickle. Fickle.
Absolute 150% fickle. My heart is easily won. As for the crit, I ran to the corner flag after he scored in midweek. Yeah. I kissed the badge. I fell in love. So those things, those things do matter to me. Overall, in the grand scheme of things, they're not that important as long as you can do the job. I don't think anyone cared about Ozil's body language when he got 12 assists or whatever it was that was so impressive last year. But,
I'm not an assist guy, but even I thought that was quite impressive. Come on.
And I've heard people talk about it, like, say, oh, you know what? Forget about it. Players don't care about the club. There should be no connection. It should just be 11 people on the pitch doing their job. But when you feel like you get a bit of a connection with an individual or with a few individuals, for me, it just makes football that bit better. And to be honest, it could be the case that Azpilicueta would move to Real Madrid next year. But even for the time that he was here, to him showing that he gives us all means something to me.
Okay. Yeah. And Zeke mentions, you mentioned Ozil and Zeke mentions Martial, who I think are both interesting because their faces don't seem to change ever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? How do we translate their body language and their facial expressions into the amount, Zeke mentioned effort, how much effort they're putting in?
Yeah.
Is it fair to say just because you're not chasing that ball that's over here or just because you haven't, you've missed your last three or four passes and your face doesn't appear to be, oh, like you really care, that means they're not putting in effort?
I think in some cases, yes. I think there are some people who can perform without overexerting themselves. And I think when things are going right and when your team is winning, that's fair enough. But there's nothing more frustrating for a fan, and maybe for you, when you guys are getting battered and Ozil doesn't move from the centre circle. You know, we had it with Nicolas Anelka, whose record for Chelsea was actually quite decent.
It was, yeah.
But whenever I saw him play, I just felt that there was never any fire in his belly. You know what I mean? I felt if there was a header to go in for, he was going to come out of it. Yeah. If there was... When I remember we played against Inter Milan and the centre-backs, Materazzi, and I can't remember who was the other one at the time, but they bullied Drogba. Literally every foul they can get in, and Anelka just stood to the side. It was like, no, I don't want none of that.
He didn't want it.
and that's the thing, as a fan, we're thinking when the times get hard, I don't mind if you're roaming about when things are easy, but when a time gets hard, I want you to put a bit of effort in. You know, track back, have some professional pride. Like, you're losing 10-2 in your case. Like, you know what I mean? Please, just try to show at least some that you care to an extent.
It's fair point. I didn't think of Anelka as well. I think his tag was Le Sulk for time as well. All right, and managers as well, Zeke. We've got Jose, Klopp, Conte, Wenger, Kike Sanchez, Flores on the opposite end of the scale, Marco Silva, and who have I got there? Oh yeah, Sanchez Flores, yeah. So Wenger, Sanchez Flores and Silva, they don't get that animated. Sanchez Flores was an example of a manager that I thought was quite calm when he was at Watford. He didn't tend to kind of get led too excitable either way, whether they won or whether they lost. How much is it important that managers, how much do you read into their body language? Is it different for players or different managers, or is it the same apply for them? Because they're not involved in the actual playing of the game.
I think it's less applicable for managers in a sense that if the game calls for it and your players aren't sticking to your instructions and you need to, you know, let them know and be animated and be loud so that they can hear you, of course, that's the only way to do it. Other than that, I don't really see the reason to be too,
So are you not like, that when your team scores in the 89th minute and your manager's kind of just like calmly walks away, do you not want to see him do a Klopp, do a Conte, beat his chest, jump into the crowd? Because it feels like you're one of us. Yeah, this is our moment.
No,
it's not important to you. Yeah.
If it's natural. If we've scored on the 89th minute and we've won the game, naturally, if you love the club, you love your job, you'll celebrate. Right.
No, some people aren't tuned that way. Wenger ain't jumping in the crowd in the 89th minute. Well, win the Champions League.
Wenger's an old man. I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't like the whole I must be seen to be animated to prove that I'm doing a job. You know, I don't. It's just fake. It's fake. Yeah. It's really contrived, and a lot of managers do that. You know, they'll stand there, do signs, and you know, wave their arms like a chicken. Yeah. And like, what are you doing?
But would you agree that you get a bit more affinity with fans
if you seem to lose your mind because you seem like you're one of the fans. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, like, even if I think we're to even take it past managers and take it to Abramovich. Abramovich sometimes does some erratic things, right? So, like, you know, well, we're not winning the league. Let's buy Torres and Luis. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, that's the equivalent of that, of city passion, that the kind of thing to do in Football Manager or whatever. But even though Abramovich has never said an actual word, like, on camera to the Chelsea fans, there's still that affinity because you still feel that
he cares,
he's in love with the club. And I think maybe Wenger would have had so much trouble with Arsenal fans this season if we maybe showed a little, well,
I knew that. Maybe showed a little more passion. I hear that.
Does that fall into Zeke's point then, that if that's not Wenger's style, doesn't mean he loves the club any less than Klopp loves Liverpool? It just might be that Wenger, just his way is to be quite, just very docile, very, very professional, you know, very
why?
Proper.
Sorry, do you know why? Because anything else other than being yourself is for the fans, right? In the stadium.
Yeah.
Because if I know my manager to be a calm, docile person, I have a one-to-one conversation with me, tell me my job before the game, trust that I do it, then I see him acting like a madman. And so I'm thinking, what are you doing? That's not you. Shut up. You know what I mean? And then you go back into the locker room and try to be docile. What are you doing? You're being fake. You lose the respect of your players. Yeah. So I think that's why you've got to have your method and stay convicted to that. And trust your players. If you are wild like Jose Mourinho and you're animated like Klopp, you'll be that from Monday all the way to Sunday. Yeah. You can't just do it at the
game.
But
will you? Because Conte's an example, and from what I hear, the way he's on the touchlines and during games is the complete opposite to how he is on the training field, when he deals with players.
But you know,
in the press room, he's definitely not that guy.
But you know he's calm, because he's calm. Yeah. But you know still, he has the capacity to blow up at any moment. So do not cross him. Yeah. If me as a player, I haven't made my manager blow up as he does on a touchline, I've had a good week. But at the end of the day, I'll know he'll chew my head off if he's pissed off. That, rather than being, you're not really an animated person anyway, so I could kick you and you do nothing. Yeah. And now you're gone doing cartwheels on the sideline. It just doesn't make sense. And
I just can feel like at some point, there's got to be something that and you know what? Let's be fair to Wenger. Sometimes I have seen Wenger every now and again just
kick some
get off the bench and just do that. And nothing major, just a little raise of the arms or something.
That's the equivalent of being in the chest and jump into the crowd.
And sometimes you just want to, I just think that just takes you to another level. I mean, I know we've gone on to managers and talk about players. I remember, and I started to dig out Anelka again, but he would score the goal in the biggest game that you've got. And he'll do like that little butterfly celebration. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what the hell?
But that doesn't mean he doesn't care. Do you know what I mean? That's just his way of.
But personally,
but you want to see more than that.
Personally, I don't think he cared. I think he saw football as a job. I'm a consummate professional at my job, but I don't care about any club that I am more than anyone else. You're an employer. I'll keep it moving, and I'll do a good job. I'm not going to overexert myself. I'm not going to go for headers and get my shiny head hurt. I'm just gonna score my goals and do what I was supposed to do.
That's fair enough. And Zeke, just your last example you gave there, I was thinking of the guy that I want at Arsenal who you described perfectly. It's Koeman. Koeman's that guy that you look at, and he doesn't get overly animated, but you look at him and you think, I don't want to cross you.
Yeah, exactly.
I do not want to cross you.
He's that teacher that will let you act up in front of the class.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. And as soon as there's a 1-1, you're like, oh,
you know it's on.
Yeah, he'll ruin your life, definitely.
Not sure what that sound effect was, Jordan.
Nor do I. Just looking for my last note here. What have I written? Okay, so my final point, was... so just do you think that players need to, when they're on the pitch, I suppose you've kind of asked already, G, but it helps when you see players G-ing other players up, you know, smiling even, beating their chest, chasing balls that they're not going to really ever catch, but those little things show effort and show that this guy, whether he's a clown or not, we don't know, but the fact that he's kind of on the pitch, we see physical emotion from him, that... Yeah, he gets an extra mark for that.
But the thing is, it only works if you feel that it's genuine.
It's real. Okay.
I think with the Joe Hart example you used, man, the way Mancini just called him out about it, you could tell it was like it felt like it was about him. The cameras are on. He's in the tunnel. Come on, lads, let's go and get it. Blah blah blah. Yeah. You know, where were you in the dressing room? Yeah. You know what I mean?
But to be fair, maybe he was that. We don't know. Maybe in the dressing room he was pumping his chest and shouting and screaming the blaze down. We don't know.
I kind of feel, especially with a guy like Mancini, who was a quite combative, you know, person himself. Why would he have a problem with Joe Hart unless he thought it was individualism? Yeah. Same thing with Sanchez when he sulks. Sometimes you feel, are you doing this or are you doing this for some kind of political play with the club or with the fans to kind of put pressure on them to get better players? Like, how much do you care about the club, or how much is it yourself?
I've heard that critique of him as well. I personally don't think. I think a lot of those South Americans, that's just how they are. If they're not scoring goals, if they're not winning games, not playing well, they just go into a sulk. We saw it with Suarez. We've seen it with Tevez. I think a lot of those South Americans are just built that way.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I have heard the criticism that it's a show. It's a political point to say, I've got to do everything here. Come on, guys, help me out. I've heard that point made. Yeah, exactly. I don't particularly agree with it, but I have heard.
And the other one is William Gallas, which is the worst example.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah, just move on. Last one now, guys. Don't know if I actually, again, sent this one to you guys to prepare on, but hey-ho. The diving ban, a retrospective ban, has been. They've said they're going to introduce it next season, I believe, into the Premier League, whereby a panel of three will look at an incident over the weekend, from the weekend. It has to be unanimous, and if all three decide that the person has dived, there will be a retrospective ban. I think it's two games. I should have double checked that, but I believe it's two games. Zeke, my question is, how policeable is this?
It's policeable. I think probably.
Is that even a word, policeable?
I don't think it is. it's you can police it. Because I think probably 75% of the time you clearly see if it's a dive or not, because it's all about momentum, it's all about the players, where he's about to, but sometimes you can't tell. So what happens then? You know, it doesn't,
it's
really
very very rare, having seen an incident, the referee's talking about, or watching it back. Oh, it's very rare you watch back and
no,
you can't see.
It's not that rare. How many times have we, you know, everyone's had discussion, that wasn't a dive, that was a dive. No, he took his standing foot. He could have carried on running. Yeah, but
the discussion normally is he dived, but then people will defend it by saying, but he had to, which we'll come to in a minute. It's not a debate of whether he was touched or not. The debate is he wasn't touched, but he was entitled to go down because of X, Y, Z.
Okay, so from this rule, I'm taking it as a player has deceived purposely the referee.
He's not been touched. As I see it, he's not been touched.
Okay. So then that should be a lot clearer than if it's post-event and three guys are watching it. But in the instance whereby a player, there's a coming together in the box, there's contact, and then a player could probably hustle to stay on his feet, or he could feel, hold on, you fouled me here, I'm going to go down easy. Is that a dive?
That's a question I don't know the answer to, but again, as far as I'm aware, I believe it's if there's no contact.
Yeah, then it's going to be, it's not going to be
black and white, isn't it?
Yeah, either you can clearly tell, why did you do that? Because it looks weird.
Yeah.
Like, the Rashford one recently, it's clear cut, that was a dive. Whereas a player, if I feel like I have an advantage and you've done something, you've gone to floor and you've tackled me, but you've taken me out and I can't now get the ball, so I'm going to go down, then that's a penalty. You know, so I don't think it's going to be that hard to police, but we'll see. It's always going to be a discussion point.
How many games would you give it?
One
game ban?
Yeah.
Serious?
Yeah. No need for two game ban. Give it one game ban. Two game ban is
that
harsh.
Is that a punishment that's befitting of the crime?
Well, only because if it's up to these three, I need to see how they are going to be judging what a dive is. Because if it's based on the clear cut, that was a purely malicious act of deceit, then give them a two-game ban. But if they're going to try and apply a sort of overrule every time someone goes down in the box and we feel it was a dive, then they could be wrong. So then a two-game ban is going to be harsh because I didn't actually dive. I was taken down in the box. Yeah, it looked soft, but I was taken down. One-game ban would still deter most players.
Well, I don't think it will. If your dive wins the game for your team, so you take a one game ban.
So what's the difference between a two game ban?
Well, I didn't say it should be two. If I'm asking you how much you think it is, if you think one is a fair punishment, that's fair enough. Make it five.
You know, Jordan is always, you know, if it should be a one game ban, Jordan always wants a three game ban. Jordan is just a punitive guy.
I'm just saying.
I was players to stay at clubs for the rest of their lives.
No.
I'd hate you to be a judge on that.
Listen, they're all going down if it was me. So do you agree with Zeke that one, two tops is adequate punishment?
I think two is adequate.
Really?
I think two is adequate. Jordan, how long do you want it to be?
I want it to be a deterrent to stop diving.
That's the thing. Not everything could be... Two games is a deterrent.
Is it really? I'll repeat. If I know that if I dive today, we're going to win the Manchester Derby. We're going to win the North London Derby. We're going to win these 3 points.
Wait.
I missed two games.
I know what you're saying.
That's a gamble I'm going to take.
I do hear what you're saying, but if they're going to stamp out diving, it has to be across the whole pitch. It's because it's a penalty, isn't it? But a dive is a dive. People dive all over the pitch. We're only going to review what happens in the box. Someone could dive outside the box and they score free.
I should have triple checked this.
Yeah.
But as I'm aware, it's across the whole pitch. Mm. I think it's just a dive is a dive. It's a dive that results in a free kick. When you score, it still impacts your team. If you dive, you get reviewed and it gets, and if they agree on it, it gets banned. So yeah, I've gone to the extreme of a penalty. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering, let's just focus in the box. That's where it hurts the most.
Yeah.
If in the last minute of the game, Chelsea United and Rashford goes down, wins a game 2-1, that's a gamble I would take.
But say an elbow to the head is 3 games. Yeah. Seven a dive should be 2 games. You want a dive to be more than an elbow or a bad challenge?
No, but just because the elbow ban is not sufficient, that doesn't mean that you judge everything else in accordance to that rule.
But maybe it is sufficient.
You then change the elbow rule.
Maybe it is sufficient. You don't have to ban people for life over things. Maybe it's sufficient.
I'm just asking, you're giving me your answer, but would this deter anyone from diving in the box?
Yes, I do think people would not want to miss two games. No, a game is needed. I think people would not want to miss 2 games. There's kind of goal bonuses, assists, there's bloody golden boots to win. People were not going to win.
Harry Kane missed half the bloody season and won the Golden Boot. 2 games are going to hurt him.
Yeah, maybe if Giroud stepped up. No, but seriously, I think in line with the current parameters of punishments now.
Sure.
Yeah. If you want to start extending things, but getting crazy and giving 6, 7, 8, you can. But within if three is a standard red card, I think 2 is fine. Or you can just level it up with 3 and say that's the standard.
Mm.
Dive, but I don't really want any more than 3 for a dive. It's not that deep.
I just feel, how much budget has the FA put into this whole process? There's so many other things that we need to be focused on in football.
I don't disagree with that. It's not that deep.
If a dive is a dive, that's part of the game.
It's not part of the game.
It's part of the game now.
People spit, but that's not part of the game.
What about when people deliberately foul? Like, step on people's
cynical,
foot
that, cynical that people yellow can't
again,
see.
Again, that's not part of the game. It happens, but it's not part of the game.
But no one's putting back to check on that, are they? Unless...
What, if I stamp on your toe in the penalty box?
Yeah, no one's going
to
know.
Is that a bigger problem than diving? And elbows to the head? Come on, it's got to be a list of priorities, surely.
For me, I look at it as in deliberately trying to injure a player, and it's always the talent of players that they try to get.
Is this your hazard bandwagon?
We can continue with that. It affects the quality of the game. If you're able to, a lot of people will slyly do something like leave a little knee on someone. Are we going to go back and look at all of those as well? Because I'd say that to me, that's more important than diving. Because I want to see the best players.
And what about the times,
at their optimum fitness?
Yeah. And what about the times when a ball actually goes out of play, but then they don't judge that to be in play? That's all part of the grey area.
There are obviously faults and flaws in the game, and so people appeal for a throw in and know it's not their throw in. The game is not imperfect, but like I said, it's a list of priorities. Surely, diving is up the top. Is one of the biggest issues within the game.
But why?
Because it affects whether you win or lose a game.
No, same way fouling does. Yeah, same exactly. way any.
I know what you're saying. It's not nice when it happens to you. But when
it's not even about just my team. I just think that it's a problem in the game that affects many, many teams.
I don't think... I think bad defending, not in terms of just making fouls, is as much a problem as diving.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, you're given the opportunity to dive by shocking challenges or lazy challenges. Mm. If people can work on those, then there'll be less opportunity for people to dive, or the dives will be a lot more obvious.
Yeah, you don't see guys diving in the box when you're being your defender standing you up. It's usually a reckless act in the box that people then take advantage of to dive. So.
Would Paul Pogba, what's your view on the Paul Pogba incident against Crystal Palace where he got booked for a dive? We've had Akin on the pod a few times.
Was it West Ham?
Was it West Ham? Sorry, West Ham. Yeah, it was West Ham. Yeah, you're right. Where he got booked for diving in that game, the counter argument was he had to get out of the way because otherwise he would have got his leg slashed.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that then? Should that be booked? Technically, he's not been touched, but the counter argument is, yeah, but if it had stayed there, he'd have got injured.
Well, that's for the panel. But a dive is you trying to gain an unfair advantage. You know, simulating and creating something. You're trying to see. Pogba in that situation, can we say he was trying to do that? Or was he just trying to jump out of the way? Now, the panel's going to have to say, was he trying to simulate or was he actually trying to just get out of the way?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I don't.
Just because we don't. This is a new job they've given us. Yeah. We don't actually know what we're supposed to be doing. But no, he wasn't. That wasn't a dive. It was just straight up wasn't a dive.
You know, I disagree with this point. I think he.
Well, the question wasn't for you. We don't get what you're doing.
Well, I'm going to take it. I'm a champion. Let me take it.
Is it now? Yeah.
I think he, this. And this is where it's the
good point he makes, though. Was he gaining an advantage?
Was a dive. I think he went beyond the boundaries of just trying to get out of the way. I think he thought, first, okay, maybe let me get out of the way. After let me get out of the way, let me land in a way that maybe earns me a free kick. And that is looking for an advantage.
Yeah, fair point. Care to come back at that? You countered your good point with a good point?
Nah.
Okay. Another example is Jamie Vardy is known for being very cute when he goes into the box of dangling a leg and making contact so that he gets... that contact and go
free much
down.
For that as
he's a master at it. Where do you stand on that then? Because if he's in a position whereby he's clearly through and it's clear his leg makes an unnatural position to make contact and goes down, although he's been touched, is that still technically a dive? Because he could have, there was no need for him to dangle that leg and make contact as opposed to the defender stretching and clipping it.
Yeah, if three guys feel the same way that he's actually just conned that situation, yeah, then ban him. But then what will happen is, or someone like Zaha, for example, who has a bad rep for diving, right?
Ashley Young as well.
Yeah. Ashley Young. So is this going to be the first time whereby people actually look at who the player is rather than what the crime was? Because someone like Ashley Young, who's he's a diver, isn't he? Chances are you actually did that. Or Vardy has a knack of doing that. Chances are you did that. Or, you know, whomever. Then
is that their own fault? You'd like to think that the start of next season, the refs will say the refs will be warned by the authorities. Right, clean slate. No, new rule. Judge everyone as on zero.
Three guys will come in with their own perceptions, and three guys will make a decision. Yes, it's good that it has to be unanimous, but who are these guys?
It's a former player, former ref, former manager.
Fair enough. But what would happen is if a player gets typecast, that could impact the player's, you know, playing career. If teams now know if you do win a penalty, you know, chances are you can actually be deemed to be diving. It won't be a major, but this is why I'm skeptical of this process, because If the referee does not do anything, it should be left. Simple. The referee has a job. Now that you're giving him help to retrospectively review it to stop players from doing that, but then those three guys could get it wrong. Do you know? Yeah. I'm just not a fan. I see why I'm just not a fan of it. It's just
and just finally on the back of Zeke's point is there now, if this question has kind of been flagged up when we've had the VAR video technology referees, whatever they're called, coming in, goal line technology is coming in. Is there a concern that this might just make referees referee-less and not make the big decisions at the time because they're so concerned about whether it was or wasn't. They just think, you know what, if I got it wrong, worst case, that guy can still get punished because the panel will judge it on Monday morning. The only thing, they'll still do their job, and then that's just a safety net.
To be honest, a lot of referees, including one of your panelists, Mike, probably, they bottle decisions anyway. Okay. So I think it probably gives them more of a safety net. On some ways, it might just embarrass them that bit more, the fact that we're going to go back and look at things and pull things back. So, yeah, a lot of referees, if there's 50-50 and they're not sure, they pull out. And in some ways, maybe they should. If you're
I'm a believer in that. If you're not 100% sure, you can't give it.
Yeah.
Do you think that might knock their confidence, though, if it kind of gets to the point where the first 2 months of next season, we're seeing 3-4 incidents whereby they've got it wrong and they start thinking, wow.
Well, Fergie's retired, so they'll be all right now. I can see where you're coming from, but I think it, for the overall good, well, I mean, I'm not that emotional about diving, but for the good that it's trying to achieve, I think it's worth it. Remember, the referees are there to support the game, not the other way around.
Fair point. Just final point, we're going to be doing, like I said earlier on, the final pod of the season. Next week we'll be reviewing the season. Got lots of points and things we're going to wrap up on the final pod next week. Subscribe to the pod, share the pod, all that goodness on Football Fans Podcast / where are we now? Gone cold. Football Fan Podcast / no, that's wrong again. SoundCloud.com/ Football Fans Podcast. Got it right. Also on iTunes, Football Fans Podcast. We're on Twitter as well, FFP_11. Thank you very much, G. Thank you very much, Zeke.
Thank you.
Champion.
Just don't lose us on Saturday, though. Don't lose G on Saturday. Because if you lose G on Saturday, it's problems, you know. It's so many problems if you lose next week. My team, it's not looking good, but hopefully we can do a ting and review the league next week. We'll also look back on the Europa League final, the Champions League final.
Really?
If they lose.
Okay.
If they lose. We'll review that final as well. We're not losing.
Oh, you're in the Europa League now. No wonder you've got.
I'm just fair. We review all the competition on the FFP. Oh, really?
And you won't win that either, so.
we're a fair podcast. We review all the league cups next season, the championship maybe as well.
Do you think you could win Europa next season?
I think you can. I think you can.
Do you think you will?
No.
You think if you will, then I'll be running down the touchline.
Until next week, peace.